since 2005. You're listening to Gamertag Radio with your hosts, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 1215. This is y'all's Danny Pena, and also joining me for this episode, the whole crew. I love it when we have everybody over here, man. So we have Paris Lilly. What's up, Paris?
Hey, good morning. How you doing, man?
Everything is good, man. Everything is good. We're going to be talking about the Steam Deck. I know you got it first than me a couple of weeks back. We're going to talk about that later on. And also, the return of Pete, part-time podcaster. What's up, Pete?
Part-time podcaster. Just came back from vacation. I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys?
Everything is good, man. I see you going ham. Your
vacations, man. You got to, man. If you're not going ham, what are you? What are you doing things for?
Exactly. I got super jealous seeing the video of Pete, you know, swimming in the middle of the ocean. I'm like, oh, I see what he's doing. Damn.
Yeah.
It's all good. All right, everyone, head over to gamertagradio.com. Post your comments and feedback. Listen to our past episodes. You also can find us on any podcast app. Just search for Gamertag Radio. We're there. Follow us, subscribe, and also post your review. Also, we have fan mail on this episode. So if you'd like to be part of fan mail, this is how you could contact us.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, like I was saying, we're going to be talking about a little bit about Steam Deck. We also have an interview with the game director of Skull and Bones, Ryan Bernard. He's going to be joining us in this episode. And also, I want to talk to the guys about E3 2023. It looks like Repop is now involved with this. We've been hearing rumors about this now for years, but now it's official. It's happening. And is it good that E3 is turning into a fan conference instead of the typical business from back then, man? Let's go with Paris, because Paris has always been vocal about E3.
I'm tired of talking about it, really. I don't have much to say other than what I've been saying the past freaking 5 or 6 years. This is pointless. I'll believe it when I see it next year. Right now, I'm not holding my breath that this turns into anything except chaos. Which publishers are coming back? Probably none of them. What is it going to be? So go back and roll the tape 5 years ago. I've been saying the same thing every year. E3 is pretty much done. This is another attempt to try and revive something that isn't needed. And the fact that you're turning into a fan event, go to PAX, go to Comic-Con. Why are we doing this? So look, being honest, other than to see all my friends, all the people, you know, that from the industry that all come to LA, I see no need for this. That's it.
I mean, honestly, I really don't see the big companies returning back. I don't see Microsoft coming back. Like, even during Summer Game Fest, Microsoft was technically not part of Summer Game Fest, but they were just doing their own thing at a beautiful theater, great venue, great location, and there was tons of people not only watching online, but also attending the event, too.
Let me spin that into my whole point.
Yeah.
Forget FanFest. Don't focus on Xbox FanFest.
Yeah.
What Keeley did for Summer Game Fest this year. Now imagine him making it bigger, so more media people are there. There's more publishers there. Now I'm going to drop 15,000 people from the public into that too. Imagine that.
That would be kind of wild, especially that venue that he had.
Well, again, they're saying they're going to go back to the convention center. I get all that. But that's going to be freaking chaos. Just like when E3 was doing it the past couple of years and they start letting the public in. No one got any work done. If you to get anything done, it wasn't in the convention center. Publishers started having stuff offsite so that the media could actually get hands on with stuff and, you know, actually play the games and talk about them instead of standing in line for hours at a time. Convention centers packed to the gills. You can't move around. It's not going to work. Sorry. It's not going to work.
I mean, to be fair, forget about E3, but to be fair, Repop has always been great at fan events, right? I don't know if they will take it to a level as like Gamescom, you know. I went to Star Wars Celebration a couple weeks back. That was chaotic for me because I haven't attended an event like that in so long. So I was like, I was there only for like an hour and I just left, right? I know they worked on PAX. Paris, you've been, I don't know if P, you've been there, but Comic-Con is also Repop. They've done that for years, you know. So could it
Star
help?
Wars Celebration
maybe.
Too. Yeah, and yeah, Star Wars Celebration. And speaking of Comic-Con, I don't go anymore because it's chaos.
It is chaos.
And that's my point. The E3 is supposed to be about the actual business of gaming, not a fan event. You're already, again, you got Comic-Con, you got PAX. The closest that we've seen is Gamescom. Being able to go to Gamescom, that structure works because that venue is 20 times the size of the LA convention. You go, like I said, you probably put 20 LA convention centers into what is Gamescom, right? They have a completely separate, you have your media side, you have your fan side, and it's just the infrastructure of it works. Convention Center is not set up to do this. It does not have the capacity to have a fan event along with an actual media event at the same time. You can't do it. They've already tried to do it. So Repop, come in, say what they want, do what they want. It's not going to work because the main portion of it is PlayStation coming back? Nope. Is EA coming back? Nope. Is Xbox going to participate? Maybe, but they're probably going to do most of it across the street anyways, right? Mm-hmm. Nintendo, okay, maybe. But you're not going to have enough of the big publishers there to make this relevant. And we had already started seeing the, you know, the cracks in that the past few years before the pandemic when E3 2019 was sad. It was sad. South Hall was a ghost town. And then what E3 2020 was going to be even worse. Not to mention, okay, it all comes back. See, I said I wanted to talk about this, but I'm so
annoyed. Hey, I got you. I got
this whole
you.
Thing. It got me talking about it. Yeah. Jeff Keighley's still doing Summer Game Fest. He was very quick to let everyone know that there will be an in-person Summer Game Fest. He's not going away. So now you're splitting it anyways. So now some publishers are going to, sorry, I'm going to go take my stuff with Jeff Keighley. Some are going to say, all right, I'm going to take some of my stuff with E3. How is that going to work? I have no confidence in it. I'm sorry for being negative, but I don't have confidence in this. I would rather Keighley just continue to do Summer Game Fest and E3 just be done. We've already been saying this for a few years anyways. The fact that you're trying to make it a fan event, it is not going to work. Just not. I have no confidence in it.
Pete, any thoughts about any of this?
I mean, having seen what Repop can do from a professional convention perspective is impressive, right? And it, and you know, if you look at, you know, EGX, which is what they do out here in Europe for the UK, they've got all the Comic-Con stuff. They've got Florida Comic-Con, Emerald City Comic-Con, C2E2, and then, you know, MCM, which is in the UK, and then you've got New York Comic-Con, all the PAX events, Star Wars Celebration. It's rather impressive if you look at it from that perspective. Can they revive E3 and bring it back to where it could/should be? It's a tall tale. It's an uphill battle for them to try to achieve that. Like Paris said, they need to have the building isn't large enough to support it, to do it properly, right? I think Gamescom is the model that should be held because you allow the fans to do what they want to do and you let the media be able to do what they need to do while they're there. The question is whether the publishers or the developers or the indie guys are going to be able to splinter themselves and do two booths, which financially doesn't make sense anymore in this day and age when everybody can control their own media. They can control their story and narrative. So I don't know. I mean, it's an uphill battle. It's going to be a very, very difficult job for them. Look, if they can do it, fantastic. If they can bring it back, that's amazing. That's great. But it's going to be hard. It's going to be rough to see them do it well.
Quick question. Have you guys got to see the video?
What's your opinion? What's your opinion?
I already told you. I already told you my opinion.
What? I clearly wasn't paying attention. What's your opinion?
You're getting old because you don't remember anything what I just said, goddammit. No, for real. I mentioned that I just can't see them making this a successful E3. I feel like either it's going to be too many people after the convention, and it will be difficult for the companies to do their business in there if they want to get like the media involved or the creators or even retailers that wants to go and check out their games. You know, it's typical E3 meetings from back then, right? It's just going to be harder, man, for companies to do all that, man. But having that amount of people, and for example, I don't know if you guys got to see the Anime Expo that happened last week in Los Angeles. It was a disaster the first day. There were so many people, they didn't even let them in for a few hours because it was just way too many people. And at the end of the day, Repop wants to have a lot of people in there, man. You know, and there was even a point where they were even saying that they're not checking people if they have the vaccine or not, as long as they wear their mask at the event. And I feel like, I don't feel comfortable to attend an event like this, you know? So imagine next year, is it something like that similar to E3 if that happened, you know? That's going to be too much for me. I can't attend an event like that at all.
You know? Well, I mean, what's probably going to happen, the way I envision it, is you're going to have West Hall, you're going to have South Hall. Basically, the open, they'll have their booths. That'll all be for the public. They're just going to kick all the media stuff upstairs into the meeting rooms. So basically, you know, for any content creator, media person, that they're going to have their appointments, they're just going to be upstairs the whole time. And then the public's going to be downstairs the whole time. Is that going to work? I don't know. My main thing, my being 100% serious for a second, my biggest thing is who's participating. That's what it really comes down to. What publishers are participating and in what capacity? If you can get everyone to come back, obviously, okay, let's do it. Let's see how it works. But the reality is you're not. I mean, the big guys are not coming back. At best, you'll get Xbox and Nintendo of the big guys. Everyone else is gone. They're not going to come back. So, I mean, in a realistic world, do you see EA saying, yep, we're going to bring all, we're coming back to the LA Convention Center? They're not going to do that. PlayStation clearly is not going to do that. And what have we been saying for years? The moment PlayStation or Xbox says we're done, this whole thing's done. And PlayStation's been done since 2019. So yeah. Why would they come back at this point? Doesn't make any sense for them.
And look, also, PlayStation could just can have one game at Summer Game Fest and they're done. That's like, okay, we're involved. That's it.
Yeah.
And they can still do the whole thing after that. Go ahead,
Pete. I mean, going back to the health concern part, right? Like, I think it was DICE, where that guy, the person knowingly had COVID.
GDC. No, it was GDC.
Sorry.
GDC,
okay. Yeah. All right. My bad. But went to all of the events, participated in everything, knowing that they had COVID and possibly potentially, I don't know how many people got infected as a result, but that's a risk of not just everybody that attends, but everybody that attends and the person and that crowd and that circle of friends and family that they're around. So now all of a sudden you're potentially, I don't want to create any kind of, you know, fear mongering or anything, but you have to take those into consideration. It makes it, you're playing with, you know, you're risking the lives of innocent people by not taking that seriously. And it doesn't make sense. And it's not worth the headache, and the risk at all just to get your stuff out when you can do what everybody's been doing for the last 2.5 years now. Have your own event. Doesn't even have to be live. It can be virtual. If you want to have a live event, you can do it with the way we used to do it back in the day, which was we would all go to an event. We would all get private hands-on time. We'd get time to speak with the developers and creative directors and artistic directors and sound people, et cetera, and get our content and go from there, but in a safe environment, in a safe, ready-made environment that's designed not for 100,000 people walking through that door, but designed to do exactly what we do best, which is go in, take all the information and relay it to our community or communities you know, because that's what we do.
Anything else before we go to the next topic?
Don't bring this topic up again. That'll be what I say.
Whoa. That was the news.
I'm just so annoyed with it because I don't believe it. I do not believe it. All right. Color me shocked in 2023 if I'm standing in LA at E3. I'll be shocked. I don't believe it.
Paris is going to take the same picture from a couple years back in the middle of chaos. He's like, with his eyes wide open. Yeah. By the way, we're going to talk about briefly the Steam Deck. I just got mine yesterday. Paris has been having his now for a couple of weeks now. Has it been a month, Paris?
I've had it longer than a month.
Longer than
really?
That?
Really? Okay.
No?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I've had it since May-ish.
Okay, that's good. And Pete, most likely, well,
yeah, because I took it with me to when I went to DC to do the flight sim stuff. So I've had it probably since the beginning of May. Yeah.
Okay. Good. And also, Pete is going to get his hopefully very, very soon. So
next few weeks.
Yeah. So Paris, my question to you: you know, I downloaded, you know, Final Fantasy VII Remake. I downloaded a couple other games too from the indie side too, and Horizon, God of War. Which were the games that you downloaded right away as soon as you got your Steam Deck?
Why don't you go back and see when I posted about it?
Wow. First of all, not everybody follow you on Twitter. Not the
whole
world.
Well, you should.
Okay?
I'm pretty entertaining. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm making myself laugh. No, I think the first things I checked out was, I know I did Portal 2. That was one of the first ones I did. God of War and Rogue Legacy 2, because that's pretty much been a staple for me, having on the Steam Deck. I know those were some of the first games that I downloaded right away. The Aperture, you know, the one that's built for the Steam Deck, the Aperture, what you call it, you know what I'm talking about.
I'll tell you right now. I saw it yesterday. Desk Job?
Yeah, there you go. Aperture Desk Job. That was another one I did as well. Mm-hmm. I set up Game Pass on it for cloud streaming. I did that as well. The game I've been playing a lot lately has been Neon White. Dude, that game's so freaking dope.
Oh,
it's so freaking good. So
highly recommended.
Good. Yeah, yeah,
highly
yeah.
Recommended. Yeah, yeah. So I'll tell you the good so far, and I think the bad is very, very small. Minor stuff, man. For me, when I was playing the Steam Deck, and Paris, you told me if that happened to you too, I'm so used to having the D-pad right next to me, you know, under the analog stick, and I will go to the part where it's like the touch pad, thinking that that's the D-pad. It's more of just getting used to,
yeah,
you know. But but not now. Like, I'm loving the device. Like, I love the way how it downloads games here. It's a lot faster than the Switch. I love that you have the option if you want to change it to like about 30 FPS, 60 FPS, depending on the game, the battery, depending on the game that you play, yeah, it will last like an hour if you play like a AAA game, or maybe an hour and a half. It can also last up to like 5 hours if you're playing like a very small indie game and everything, man. So I'm really enjoying this a lot. The speakers, the sound in this is incredible. I just love the whole thing, man. The whole thing. Now, the part where I was kind of confused and I still haven't figured out the whole how to get a Game Pass S Cloud in this. I know there's a whole process. You gotta like exit to the desktop and everything. Mm-hmm. But I wish there was like an easier way where you could do it straight from the app of Steam. You could just go there, download let's say Game Pass or whatever, and it will be there instead of me going to a browser. And because I believe it's like a Firefox browser where I try to do it, man. So, but. Yeah, I'm really enjoying this a lot, man. Really
no, once you get it set up, like I literally can show you right now. I don't know for people I don't know how good that screen is, but once you get it set up, you can literally put the icon just on the normal Steam port, and you just launch it from there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Because like,
okay,
God, I don't think this camera's focusing right. So it's like that's directly from. I'm launching into it now. So I don't know. Oh, I don't know if you can how much you can see it.
Yeah, I can see something.
But yeah, and then boom, I'm right in there. And then like, let's say I wanted to Oh, it wants me to sign in because I haven't done this in a minute.
Nah, it's all
but
good,
yeah,
it's
I'm not gonna worry about it now. But the point is, yeah, you go through that process through the desktop mode. Probably takes about 10-15 minutes to get it set up. And then once you do that, you're good. Add the icon. It'll show up in your Steam library, and then you just launch it from there and you can play.
You know, one game that I was kind of confused, wondering, do I have space or what? And I had plenty of space because I got the most expensive Steam Deck, right? So I downloaded Horizon. That one is like a good 70-something gigs, and it was going fast downloading, right? But then I go and download God of War, which is only 30-something gigs, right? For some strange reason, and Paris, you tell me if this happened to you too, it will say reserving space. It took me 31 minutes to have that, and then it started downloading. I don't know why that's happening. It's something to do with that game. But with Horizon, within minutes I downloaded it, and that's a way bigger file. You know, so that's the only negative part that I'm like, yo, this is kind of weird and strange, man. You know, but I downloaded all the games that's verified, and there's a couple games that is not verified that I also downloaded, and that's because they're very, very new. Because I just got like early copies. One I can't say what it is, but the other one is Madison. It's a new horror game that just came out for Steam. The developer, I believe, is in somewhere, I think it's South America, part of the Latin America country. But the game is so good, Madison, if you're into like horror games, man. You know, so Neon White, I definitely downloaded that. Also, a new game, which is also coming out on Xbox, Hypercharge Unboxed. It's a third-person FPS where a third-person shooter, I mean, where you're actually, everybody's like toys, and you play against other toys and everything, man. So it's really, really cool. Highly recommend for that one to download. I also have Apex Legends, Final Fantasy VII Remake, Neon White, of course, Streets of Rage, Ninja Turtles, all that too, man. So, and my favorite game, you'll be playing a lot too, is Vampire Survivors, man. Highly recommend to get that game too, man. So, Paris, anything else you want to say about the Steam Deck?
Well, yeah. Well, while you were talking just now, I did sign in, and I fired it up on a cloud right into Psychonauts 2 playable. So, I mean, that's just how quick it is to be able to do that on there. But yeah, from the native game, another game that I've been playing a lot natively on Steam Deck is Loot River as well. It's think of it as Murder Tetris. It's kind of the best way to describe it. That's a great indie game to play on there as well. But the beauty of the Steam Deck is it is a PC. It is a 100% PC. You can do whatever the hell you want. Emulation, whatever you want to do. I mean, yeah, they give you the nice UI to go into your Steam library natively and play all the games from there. But you can go into desktop mode. You can put the Epic Game Store in there. You can put GOG on there. Do whatever you want. It is a PC. You could even dual boot and put Windows on there if you so choose. And, right, you know, the drivers still aren't 100% up to date, you know, to make it a real viable option. But the fact that you can do it is the point. And then you were talking about internet browsers. Danny, you can put Chrome on there. You can put, obviously, Firefox. Again, whatever you want. It is a Linux PC. And that's the possibilities. This thing, and, you know, I'm sure people see on social media, you know, me and Greg Miller and, you know, joke around about it, you know, until he got his. But the truth of the matter is, and, you know, Blessing has a great video you can see on Kind of Funny as well, talking about the Steam Deck. But this thing is going to change the way that we play games. The Switch may have started all this, but the Steam Deck and whatever iterations that we're going to see in the future is going to completely change the game, because it's going to allow us to play everything. You can play anything on here. Xbox, play whatever you want. You can be able to play on this thing. And the fact that the controls on this are so great, the fact that I'm already to the point, because I just traveled this week for work, took it again on the airplane. I'm literally on the airplane just playing God of War the whole time. Like the PlayStation version of God of War, the 2018 game, and it was fine. Anything that you can think of that you want to play on here, it is playable. And the fact that Valve is constantly updating this thing and improving it just goes to show you the potential of what it's going to be. Yeah, this is the 1.0 hardware. Is it 100% perfect? No. But imagine what Steam Deck 2.0 is going to be. It may not even be Valve that makes it. It might be another company that makes it. But the point is, this thing is going to change the way that we play games. We're going to be able to take AAA games of AAA, indie, all types of games, wherever we want to go. That dock is about to come out. you're basically going to be able to use it like a Switch, dock it onto a monitor, be able to play it at home with the control. Like, again, it has Bluetooth. So I play with my AirPods. It's for the audio, right? I can connect an Xbox controller to this if I so choose. You can do whatever you want. That's the beauty of this thing. And I'm excited about the future of it. And that's why we talk about it so much. Because it's truly a revolutionary product. It really is.
You know, I don't know if you tried to test this out, Paris, but I also connected the Steam Deck to my TV, and I was playing my games on the TV. You know, it's not a dock, because I know the official dock is not out yet, but I know there is third parties already have
their
version of docks too. Yeah, mm-hmm. But I'm probably gonna get one just for now until the official one comes out, and yeah, I could play my God of War games, my Apex, you know, anything that I have here, I could play on my TV, just enjoy it. Also, I could even connect this to the PC if I want to stream some games, you know, show that to the public. That's something that you could do too, man, you know. And It looks great, because I connected my Xbox controller, and you'll even see the icon. You're pressing the home button, dashboard, everything pops up. Like, it's exactly how it is, man, the console too, man. It's really, really cool, man. I love it a lot, man. Pete, do you have any questions about the Steam Deck or what?
I mean, I've already done enough research on it. My only concern is A, availability. When am I going to get it? I know, Paris, I had asked you a while back about your dual boot. If you dual booted it yet, and I guess you have not.
Nah. Okay. Nah, I'm not. Because it doesn't have enough driver support yet. I mean, you can do it just to do it, but it's not practical. So I'd rather just keep SteamOS on here and just use it that way versus putting Windows on and it's only going to halfway work. And, you know, it's not going to be something that I'm going to use on a daily basis.
Then besides that, I know you said, like, depending on the hour, depending on the game or the game type, a battery life is 1 to 5 hours. What about if you sit there and you have it, like, if, for example, I'm on a long haul flight rather frequently, right? Can I plug it into a power jack? Or a portable battery and power the device substantially?
It's funny you say that. I don't know, because the most that I was on a plane, I did a direct flight from San Diego to Washington. And I mean, we're there in like 4.5-5 hours. So I didn't really have a need to do it in that scenario. But like you're saying, international flight that's going to be longer, you would want to test that out. But I don't know. I'd actually have to go look that up myself to see if you can play it in real time with a power source connected to it. I'm going to guess yes, but I don't want 100% confirm that.
I could answer that, because I've been watching videos.
Well, then why didn't you speak up earlier? Why did you let me stumble
through that? You spoke.
When you could have said something. When I said, I don't know, you should have immediately stepped in and go, hey, well, I've done it. Let me answer your question, Pete. Instead, you let me go.
And not like it's ever stopped you from interrupting.
No, I'll tell you why. Because I was being respectful. Instead of going ham. Instead
now
of going
you
ham,
are.
You know,
I've
I
known
said,
you for 17 years, and not one day in your life have you not interrupted me on something.
No, but there's videos out there that people have, like, battery packs that connected to their Steam Deck, and they'll play like that too, and also recharges while they're playing. So that's something you could do. But just want to say, like, I just saw that recently last night, a couple videos on YouTube.
Okay,
about that's it. Good to know. I just don't know which type of battery packs they would just. You know, saying like best accessories for you to buy for the handheld device. Right. So that's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else?
That's it, man.
Well, you tell us. You're the one that just got it. You asking me all the questions?
Pete doesn't have, so I want him to ask questions, Paris. But man, stop being tough, man. You're not tough.
Wow. I'm going ham.
I'm going ham.
It's all good. All right, so yeah, guys, if you have any questions about the Steam Deck, send it to fan mail, and we'll try our best to answer it. And if you have a device and you want to play with us online, I would like, you know, play. Add me, Godfrey7. I know Paris is probably not going to say his name, but there you go.
My name is literally the same everywhere. It's Vicious696. I love how you try to set it up like I'm this a-hole that can't share.
You are an a-hole. Big time. It's all good. All right. So, guys, we're going to play this audio, only on the podcast, of course. And this is from the game director at Ubisoft for Skull and Bones. They just had a presentation a couple of days ago. His name is Ryan Bernard, and I had a great sit down with him about the game. And once we come back, we have one more segment, and that's Fan Mail. We'll be right back after this.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
All right, so we have Ryan Bernard here, game director for Skull and Bones. And Ryan, it's been a long time. I think the last time I played the game was actually E3 2018. So
probably.
Yeah. So a lot of people want to know, man, the changes. What was this all changes about from, you know, compared to back then and now the new Skull and Bones?
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, good question. It's pretty much, I would say, almost everything. I think what you saw at E3 was much more of a, let's say, a 5v5 kind of arena-based naval combat type of game. Mm-hmm. Ubisoft really wanted to have something that in the pirate genre that they could have as a live service game, right? For years to come. And so it was, I guess, a organizational and a studio kind of desire to change direction, which is when our current creative director, Elizabeth Pellin, joined the team. It's before my time. Mm-hmm. But Elizabeth and I worked together years ago in a former life on The Division. So I was very familiar with her, and she kind of set this direction of a more based in the dawn of piracy type of game in the Indian Ocean, you know, 17th century, kind of grittier, darker, more intense, let's say, with survival and crafting and all of these other elements. Where we could add in persistence, we could add in progression, we add in an open world or an open sea type of experience, which is very different. I would say the one note that is carried through and would still be true is that kind of really fast-paced, visceral naval combat, you know, shooting for really best-in-class naval combat for a gamer, you know, something that is responsive, that there's depth to it, that there's, you know, customization and choices, and there's layers of mastery in the combat. So that's something that you'll feel notes of familiarity of what you played last time, but pretty much everything else has been changed, let's say.
Yeah, I got to check out the presentation, and one question I do have: are we going to see, like, I love playing with friends, right? So is this something that they're going to be part of my ship, or we're going to have multiple ships per person? Like, how's that going to work?
Well, so at launch, you're going to be able to have access to 12 player ships. So we really want players as they grow and go through the journey of basically just an outcast up to a kingpin to unlock and build and craft all of these ships, your fleet. And then on top of that, you know, the game at its core is we really want it to be a social game, a social experience. So pirating with two friends, so you have your group of three, needs to be the best way to play the game. So there's all kinds of benefits to grouping up, from kind of buffs, as we say, you know, like there's your crew, so there's morale bonuses, so you don't need to feed your crew as often. There's roles that you can take. Our ships have categories, so there's cargo, there's naval, and there's firepower. So you can kind of take up, it's not the traditional tank, healer, DPS that you might find in an RPG, but you can kit out your ships to play more of a support role, to play more of a tanky kind of damage taker and damage dealer role, to have someone that's kind of fast paced and high DPS taking out maybe reinforcements in a big battle. So we do support that kind of gameplay because, again, we want it to be, the best played when you play, you know, with friends. And then if you're, you know, on a PvP server, it's just safety, you know, safety in numbers. It's always better to be a pirate with a fleet than a pirate by yourself.
Yeah. So if your crew is unhappy, what happens? Are they not willing to fight, or they just go away? Like, how's that going to be?
They
where they're unhappy.
They will toss you overboard. It's they will mutiny if you don't take care of your crew. It's kind of like a ship sinking event where so provisioning is a big part of our, let's say we call it the voyage loop. So before you head out, whatever you're doing, you open your map, you look at a fort or a trade route. You want to try to go after some of those goods or just an area, a new faction before you head out to sea, depending on, you know, from one of the dens, our kind of little mini pirate cities. You want to make sure you've got enough repair kits for your ship, that you've got enough provisions, different types of food that will keep them happy. Because as you're out at sea, they're working hard. You know, they're helping you sail your ship, and you get you have a morale drain, basically. And there's better types of foods that can slow that down. Grouping with other pirates will slow it down. But you do need to basically provision for how long you intend to be out.
So it's only based on food, like, you know, because I've seen pirate movies and they love drinking too. So
they do. We have liquids in the game, right? But yeah. There isn't any alcohol consumption by the players or anyone in the game. There is alcohol that you'll discover that you actually can kind of homebrew and deliver to other pirates from your hideout that you'll eventually unlock in the game. But you don't drink alcohol per se, but there are liquids that only provide benefits, to your crew. So there's basics, which you need food, and then drinks basically are always just kind of buffs. They're always just beneficial, enhancements for your crew.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be people that just want to play solo. Is there going to be any missions that's only available for solo players or any type of new experiences only available there too or no?
Sure. I hear that. I end up, you know, sadly playing solo a lot by myself when I'm playing content or testing things. So, you know, the goal is with these games is you definitely want to be able to play the whole game solo. And of course you can in Skull and Bones as well. But there will be a point where you might find it very advantageous at the end game to group up with others because the game needs to provide, you know, stronger and stronger challenges, harder contracts, which are deals that you make with the NPC pirates, you know, forts that you might want to take on that are heavily reinforced with towers that are firing at you. And then you've got to take out certain structures. So it can get very, very hard to do solo, but you can play through it completely solo.
All right, I'm ready for it. I'm ready for solo or multiplayer. We'll see.
Nice.
Yeah. So, what are the things that you guys learned? I've learned from working on this, you know, making the huge change from like the older build and to this now.
Well, I mean, a lot, obviously. I wasn't around for the actual initial change. I've joined about a year and a month ago now, where, you know, post-COVID, was kind of looking for a new gig from where I was. And I got contacted by Elizabeth and also our brand manager, two people I'd worked with before at Ubisoft, had very, very good relationship with Ubisoft. So, you know, and Singapore, I mean, you know, there's nothing bad about coming to live in Singapore. But I would say some of the bigger challenges are how to first build an open world that's a vehicle open world. You know, what are the metrics? What sizes do you need? It's very different than let's say an Assassin's Creed, things that Ubisoft is very used to building, even in these open world games. They're, to give you reference, you know, Valhalla, which just, you know, came out pretty recently, is about 95 square kilometers, and we're 620 at launch. So the size is huge. Figuring out how combat works with vehicles, how getting AI to have, let's say, behaviors. So there's kind of classes that the players can understand. That's really challenging. Then putting the layer of what type of weapons and armor you equip is important based on what you're facing. You know, that's a new, you know, something that was challenging to add. Keeping that combat very responsive, but adding depth and mastery was challenging. So, you know, how do you put in repeat these games? You know, it's not a narrative driven story experience, right? Where there is story in the game. There's big, important kingpin pirates that you'll meet, and they have little story arcs that you do with them. But it's not a narrative driven game where it's boom, you finish Skull and Bones and there's credits and it's done. You know, this is a gas game. This is a live game. So how do you fill that with content and learn how to make, you know, these deals that you can do over and over, and they can still be varied and interesting. So there's lots of challenges, but you know, for a really talented team in Singapore and our global partners, like, you know, this is what designers love, right? You love to get in and be like, okay, how can we, you know, try something new, learn something new, and push what we want to get into the game. So challenging, but I think also very, very rewarding.
Are you guys planning to add any crossplay to this in the future, or is it available there too or no?
It is available totally crossplay. So, and we'll be launching on, and forgive me, Matt, I always screw up on all the different platforms, but all the major ones, PS5, Xbox, PC, Stadia, and there's probably some that I missed. We can give you the full list, but it's definitely fully crossplay already and will be at launch.
That's good. Now my question is, if you in a pirate ship, do you like to be in charge, or are you one of those like, I want to be just on the side and not deal with the major things in there?
Well, I mean, and on the ships right now, everyone is captain. So there isn't it's not like maybe another pirate game you may have played where you can, you can have different people on your ship. Our ships, they're all, you're in control. You're navigating. And then when you're in combat, you're taking first person control of all the different weapons. Not saying that in the future we might explore different directions, but for launch, it's you do everything. You are the captain. So your crew is there to help, and they fire your weapons, and they can assist in combat with what we call crew to crew combat. But you are the man or the woman and the pirate that is in charge.
You know, I still have my E3 2018 Skull and Bones t-shirt, and every time I wear it, people are like, that game is never going to come out. Look, it's officially come out, man.
Oh, you know, doubters. So. The doubters.
I mean, it's been a while, man, so I'm excited. Dude, I'm very excited.
They're still going to lose big Twitch points when the bets actually come in.
Yeah. No, it's going to be good. Yeah, I'm very excited to just play with friends and just discover things in the game, man. You know, I just love it, man. It's very, I know stuff, something about the sea, it's like very relaxing to me, you know.
So, true, you know, and that's, you know, an important part. There is moments where you're just exploring. Yeah, we have a lot of that in the game. There's treasure maps that you find and you can solve that are really non-combat oriented. You have to figure out where they're at, kind of hunt it down, and then find it in the outpost on land with a new gameplay mechanic. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful game. You know, it's there are very many surreal moments where you can come out of a huge storm with lightning and massive waves, and then it calms and it's just nighttime with the moon out and the ships are kind of docked. A lot of that, and it's really quiet. So mm-hmm. there's tons of kind of moments all the time that you can find out there. So which is great.
What are the tips for those that like getting into this right now, like the tips of upgrading your ship? Do you think it's more of your crew? Is it more of just upgrading the weapons or what?
Well, everything in the world is important. So mm-hmm. when you find something on the sea or you collect it or gather it or whatever, save it. That's my first big piece of advice, because most likely you'll find a design or a blueprint that we call, which is kind of the stolen tech as you progress in Infamy to build different types of ships, bigger ships, different weapons. And a lot of those recipes require some of these oddball things that you'll come across. So my first big tip is don't just sell stuff to the vendors, right? The pirates in town, because you may find that you need those things for something you want to build. I would say that, you know, it's important to, the game is all about risk reward. So really, as you're learning combat and learning, don't try to take on too much, because you may find that you lose your ship, because we do, you know, there is an element of loss, because it is risk versus reward. Mm-hmm. So making sure that you learn how the game works, what kind of content you can take on, you know, merchant ships versus like a settlement and a plunder, a full thing is a very different in challenge level. But I would say that really we try to make sure that we, what we call onboard, where we teach the player how to play the game, is quite a long experience, because it's a big game. There's lots of things to it. Mm-hmm. So by the time you get through that kind of path of where you start the game, you find the pirate den, the first pirate den, and you get up to the point where you're start to where you're about to start to be able to talk to the first kingpin, because he won't even, you know, you're nobody when you start the game. He won't even talk to you, right? So when you get to the point where you're about ready to be able to do jobs with him, you should have a good handle on how the game works, what you need out there, what's dangerous, what are easy targets, maybe easy prey. And I would say hoard all the stuff, hoard all your resources, hoard all your woods, your ores, your cloth, your metals, because you will need them eventually. So those are some of my first big tips. And don't play with your QC team, because they will sink you at every opportunity.
They will sink you. Be careful on that. They will just sink you. Yeah, my last question, man. What I know you've been around only for a couple of years working on this, man. So any favorite things that you're proud of that you've been since you've been working on this project with the team?
That's a great question. I mean, tons of things I'm proud of the team for, right? They really had when I joined, they had pretty much passed for this direction of the game one of their first big internal milestones, where we've kind of pieced the whole game together, right? Where you could play it as a continuous experience for the first time. And really, since I've been with them, it's been, you know, my job is mostly to try to connect the dots, try to make things that the IP and the vision from the creative director all come together and make sense in a gameplay, you know, standard. So the work that the team has done with the Infamy system, with progression, with adding the depth to combat with what we call weapon counter system. You'll see there's going to be stuff coming on out about that, but adding in, you know, meaning to why you need to progress, adding in, you know, resources all over the world, you know, adding depth to the AI. So the amount of work that the team has done globally has been amazing and shocking. So I would say there's nothing in particular that I'm super proud of. I'm proud of the whole game really starting to come together and how it's come together to be something that is, you know, hopefully going to be really, really a surprise, like you said, to our fans that have played, and hopefully a good surprise and something that we can start engaging with our community with, because we know in a live game, there's, you know, it's never going to be perfect, and it shouldn't be, because that's where you start to make, you know, what does the community want? What's our plans? How are we combining those to give the players the types of activities or gameplay that they're looking for, so that we can have this really long-term, you know, relationship with the community.
No, I just want to say, Ryan, man, thank you for taking your time. I know it's a crazy time difference right now over there. It's like
it
a
is,
poor
it
man.
Is quite a bit. It is. Yeah, quite a yeah. Bit, but yeah. No, thank you for taking the time. Thanks for giving us some attention for our little pirate game.
Definitely. And I'm excited to finally play the final build, man. You know, I was excited back then. I think this one's going to be better too, man. So
awesome.
Can't wait.
Well, we're excited to have you play and everyone else.
Yes. Yes. All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. No problem.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right. So we're back here, and we have actually two questions. One, I just saw it recently on Discord, and let me see if I could go in there. But yeah, that was Ryan. Shout out to the whole Ubisoft crew for giving me the opportunity to interview Ryan, talk about Skull and Bones. Are you guys excited about Skull and Bones? Because I know we got to play it back in 2018, man. So it's going to be a different game that we got to see a couple years back, man. But I'm excited. I think I want to try it out. Very curious to see how it's going to look, you know?
Yeah, you know, being serious for a second, I mean, I'm interested. It's drastically different from what we played a few years ago. I mean, this looks more like, I'm blanking on the right term to use for the genre. This is more of not a simulation. What is the word I'm looking for? You're managing all your resources in you know, on the boat, the crew, like the crew can mutiny on you, all that stuff. It interests me. I'm definitely curious, you know, to see more and hear more about it. I'm blanking on the right genre to call this, but okay. Yeah, it's Well, you should be helping me. You always have to answer everything else. You should be like, oh, Paris, it's blah blah blah. Instead, you're like, no, it's all good.
Paris, I'm being respectful, Paris. You said I talk a lot, so I'm just letting you do your thing.
Nah, but I'm definitely curious to see more about it and check it out. I think this feels like a more realistic Sea of Thieves, if that's a decent comparison.
Okay, so let's go. And do fam
and he, and, he, and he has nothing. He has nothing to say.
No, I don't. I don't. I have nothing to
say. Wow. Then why'd you bring it up? Why am I the one that's always talking? Huh?
Hey.
You always
I'm letting you talk.
You're a terrible host. I'm just going to say that.
You know what? So you host, biatch.
All right. Then I'll host. All right. Let's go on to the next topic and fan mail.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
There you go. Thank you.
Paris. See, I did. All right.
So this is the first question from Zampao. He says, hey, there are rumors of Ubisoft going back to Egypt for the next Assassin's Creed. I'm seeing a lot of tweets about Origins coming out from them. Of course, it could just be that, the heat. I mean, this has been a hot summer. Okay, thank you for that. Do you think this game is going to go back to Egypt, or is it going to be a different country, different time, place, or what? Let's go. For me personally, I think no. I would love to see this at a totally different location, a location we have never seen before. For example, maybe go to somewhere like Tokyo, you know, maybe in Latin America. I think that would be really cool, in my opinion, for me. So that's for my opinion. You guys? And you guys want to go and answer that one, or what? No? Okay. Let's go to the next question.
from what I understand, it's called Forgotten Saga. That's the internal title. And it's supposed to be a different spin on the way it's played. Whether it goes back to whether it goes back to Egypt, I don't think so. I think it's gonna leverage more of like the Norse mythology. Mm-hmm. From what I've read and from what I've seen, it's gonna be more based on, you know, the Greek underworld, Niflheim, you know, which is, you know, and I think they're bringing in Surtur, not the Surtur from the Thor movie, but, you know, obviously, you know, Thor does, you know, lean heavily into Greek mythology and stuff like that. So I think that's what we're seeing instead.
Okay. Paris?
I honestly, I've not, been keeping up to date on potential new locations for it and everything. So like what Pete was just saying, that was all brand new news to me. So it sounds interesting.
Yeah. All right. So let's go. This is a voicemail. It's like a minute plus, but I think this is a very interesting voicemail. So I'm going to play it right now.
Hey, it's Jordan from Wisconsin calling in. Listen, I just want to talk about the Xbox showcase real quick. I understand there was a lot of discontent. A lot of people felt like maybe there wasn't a whole lot of AAA bangers. But I saw some pretty negative things said about Pentiment. But honestly, that was one of the things that got me the most excited. I understand it's a narrative game. It's AA. But it is made by Josh Sawyer, who's a great writer working for Obsidian. And honestly, this kind of seemed like a passion project. I think like 6 people were working on it, so it's not like it took a whole lot of resources away from Obsidian. It just kind of shows a culture shift within Xbox. A game like that never, ever would have been greenlit like 10 years ago. There's absolutely no way. But I think it's really important that stuff like that does come out of first-party Xbox studios. Little passion side projects like that are the way that you keep creators like Josh Sawyer. A lot of times people kind of get creative burnout just constantly working on sequels or remakes or AAA projects, and they don't get a chance to really do the things that they're passionate about. It can kind of cause talent to leave. You've seen before talent leaving studios just to go start their own studio so they can actually follow that stuff. It's a great way to set morale, keep things creative, keep creatives passionate. Because the second that your creatives feel like they have to leave in order to go follow their passions, you failed as a business. I'm just saying, I think it's a really good sign. Of course, AAA stuff still going to come out of Obsidian and the other studios, but it kind of shows that maybe Xbox is heading down a good path of retention and being able to draw other creatives out that they can hire in the future. Thanks. Really appreciate the chance to call in. Doing great, Danny and Paris. Really appreciate the insight. Talk to you guys later.
And also Pete. thanks for the voicemail, man. Much love to you, man. And look, I agree with him, man. You know, a game like, for example, Grounded, that game is not a AAA game, but it's a AA game. And the game is a lot of fun. And that was a passion project from Obsidian. And look, now the full version of the official release of the game is coming out now in September. The team, they're planning to be at, I believe, at Comic-Con. I don't know what exactly they're planning to do over there. But, you know, that game is totally different. Something that we have never seen before from Obsidian. Again, a passion project. And it's been a successful game for them. You know, I just love not only AAA games, but I love double A games and also indie games, man. You know, it's good to see that type. You know, back then, it was AAA games were a thing that we were so used to back then, you know, in the early days of gaming, man. But now it's all over, man. I feel like there's more freedom when it's not a AAA game at all, because studios will like to do new things that has never been done before. And at the same time, because of their success, a lot of the bigger studios and publishers will snatch that idea and also will add it to their games, you know. So I always love AAA and AA games and indie, man, for me, man. So keep it up. I think it was a great presentation overall for me at Xbox when they did the showcase a couple weeks back, man. So that's what my opinion. Any opinions from you guys when it comes to the AA games?
No, I mean, to this point on the voicemail is, yeah, this is how it should be. You know, keeping this specific to Xbox, they're growing so much with all these different studios. Clearly not, you can't have all these games come out all at once. So you take a studio like Obsidian, who has these ideas and these passion projects that they want to do, you let them go do it. And to his point, instead of forcing a studio into continue just make sequel after sequel after sequel, and then they get bored with it, now all of a sudden people at the studio want to move on to go other places to do other things. Classic example of this is Bungie. This is why Bungie left Microsoft. They didn't want to just make Halo. And obviously we've seen where they've moved on to and what they've become since. You don't want that to happen with some of your other studios. I think I'd look at the Coalition. Yeah, they're going to make a Gear 6, but they're going to do something else before that. That's good. That's good. That's healthy for that studio, for those teams to be able to diversify and do other things, you know, be it on a AAA scale or be it like on a AA or you know, an indie scale as well. Not everything has to be a big budget AAA title. You can do these smaller things, try out new gameplay mechanics and things that you might incorporate into one of your bigger projects down the road. Let's take an example, Insomniac. Spider-Man doesn't exist without Sunset Overdrive, as an example, right? That was Insomniac not wanting to just keep making Ratchet and Clanks a whole bunch, you know, over and over. They partnered with Microsoft, made a Sunset Overdrive that inspired them. They took mechanics out of that game and put it into their next big game, which was Spider-Man, right? That's the whole point of this. So, yeah, I'm happy to see Obsidian being able to branch out and make these smaller titles, which may help them down the road making an Avowed or eventually a Fallout Vegas 2 or something like that. And I'm sure we're going to see other studios at Xbox Game Studios do similar things. Like I think Double Fine being able to, after Psychonauts 2, they're not making Psychonauts 3. They're splitting the team up into making some smaller games that are going to be able to come out. And again, that might inspire them to, for their next big project, you know, years down the road, being able to do smaller things. So this is good for the industry. It's healthy to be able to see studios branch out and do smaller things, you know, in between the big AAA projects.
Yeah, it's like a game like Neon White, Paris, like one of the there best games I play this year. That's not a AAA game at all. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that's the part that I'm excited to see more games that are so unique and different than the regular games we got to see now, because studios are willing to take that risk to try new things, man, that has never been done before, you know? So very excited about that. What about you, Pete?
Well, I think it's great that that Josh Sawyer had the wherewithal to go to his CEO, to go to his boss, right? And I've always ruined this guy's name, Fergus Urquhart. That's the CEO of Obsidian. That he went to him to say, look, you know, because he pitched this game originally back when he was at Black Isle Studios in 99. So considering it's like a 20 year passion project for him to finally be able to go out and deliver this. I think it's great that, you know, he was able to say, look, you know, this is something, you know, like further to what Paris said, you know, yeah, we're always going to, I mean, he did Fallout New Vegas and then all the other, you know, the mods and DLCs that came out. He did Pillars of Eternity and Pillars of Eternity 2. So, you know, he's been working on other games throughout this entire, you know, span of time, but he's always had this passion project that he wanted to get done. I think he even tried going to Kickstarter to get funding for it and he didn't, and I think he got some success. But I think it's great that he was, you know, he stuck to his passion. He stuck to his dream of setting up this game. And now that he's actually able to deliver it. And ever since its announcement, the hype around it has been amazing, right? It's not like when, it's not a normal game that you typically, you know, see in 2022, but the response from gamers and, you know, the media has been extremely remarkable. So that's great, right? It's not like, you know, it's not like he's coming in with a shooter or, you know, some crazy RPG. It's not something that we're technically, you know, used to in this day and age of video games. So to see him push that passion project and to see that the support is coming in hard, it's fantastic.
Yeah. And this is the beginning. You know, I think mm-hmm. the past couple of years, Pete, and you tell me too, Paris, if you agree with this, but the past few years, indie games has been outshining a lot of the AAA games too, man. It's been amazing seeing this just overall in any console. Doesn't matter if it's PC or just the regular consoles, man. It's exciting to see this, man. Yep. Very exciting. Anything else, guys, before we wrap it up?
No, I think that's it.
Good. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Gamer Tag Radio. I'm planning to be out of town later this week. I have some really cool content coming
up. Where are you going?
In the future. None of your business. So I'm planning to do a couple things for the show, and you'll find out, Paris. Subscribe, like how you subscribe to other podcasts. You subscribe, and you'll find out what it is, okay? All right, there you go. And you can listen to it during your vacation if you want.
And you can critique it on your iPad.
I'm gonna make a ham sandwich.
Mm-hmm. A ham sandwich. All right, cool. That's funny. Make sure to put some other ingredients in there too. Head over now. I'll make it
very bitter.
Oh wow. Mm. Head over to GamerTalkRadio.com. Listen to our past episodes. You could also find us on any podcast app. Just make sure to follow, subscribe, and make sure to share it. And also send us questions, man. If you wanted to be part of fan mail, here's how you could contact us.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, for those who are listening, you could watch NBC LX on Monday during the evening show. I'm going to be there talking about GTR and stuff that I've been doing. They're going to interview me. And also, I have an announcement to make. Hopefully, if everything goes well, I'll probably mention in there. So stay tuned. Very excited about this.
Danny, yeah. can I say something before we get out of here? So first of all, you know, everything that you've been doing at NBC lately has been awesome. I'm very proud of you and I'm very happy for you because you are truly a pioneer in this industry. You really are. I'm not sitting here today without you. You are a pioneer in the gaming industry and this community is blessed to have you. I sincerely mean that.
Thank you. Thank you. I wasn't sure where you were going to go and I'm like, all right, you know what?
You're a pioneer, dude. You're a pioneer. Thank you. That's all I got to say. Pioneer.
Pioneer, thank you so much, man. Pete, you want to say anything else? You good?
Nah, I think, you know what, I think we've said enough. Just go ham on whatever you're doing moving forward.
Yeah, that's how it is, man. It, you know, remove all the negativity and just stay focused and keep it up, man. That's for everyone, man, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, nah, I appreciate that. Appreciate all the support. A lot of, you know, a lot of people are hitting me up because a couple of days ago was my birthday. And honestly, this is the best time of my life, man. You know, I feel like because of the people I've been surrounding with the past few years, it's been helpful for me mentally, spiritually. Like, I've been in a place I've never been before for me, man. And I can't wait for the future, and things are looking really, really good, man. You know, but thank you, Paris and Pete, for being there, and even our community, man, for always being supportive. Even if you listen to the podcast here and there, you know, it doesn't have to be every week. Hey, that to me is amazing, getting that support, man, for everyone. So thank you so much. Thank you so much. All right, we're going to wrap it up here. Until next time, we're out. Thank you for listening to episode 1215. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.